today I want to talk about who is the ideal you. This time of the year tends to be more stressful than other times of the year. Doesn't mean they're not stressful, just means this one happens to be the most stressful. I had a cardiologist client who once told me that this time of the year, from just before Thanksgiving to a little after the New Year, there were more cardiac events than other similar time frames the rest of the year. I think if we know who the ideal you is, or the ideal me, or the ideal him or her, we're going to be able to handle stress a lot better. So in these stressful situations, there's going to be conflict between you and you. I've talked previously about the split that occurs between people based upon incoming energy that disturbs their self-image, their sense of self, their identity. Frankly, I think that is one of the most significant aspects of mental health. If we can identify those splits and take steps to reintegrate or to heal the parts of us back into the whole, we're going to be a lot better off. So there is going to be conflict between you and you. Do you go to this party tonight or do you stay home? Do you buy gift number one for so-and-so or do you not give them a gift? All of that stuff is going to go on. But it could be more helpful to us if we had a sense of the ideal you. Because there are so many influences that are pushing and pulling us. If you looked at any advertising on television or in magazines or newspapers, you know, we are bombarded with all of these attempts to get us to act in certain ways. And if we have a sense of ourselves that's aligned with the ideal you, it's going to create a level of certainty, of confidence, purpose that are going to lead to good feelings, because of that sense of stability and balance. Who thinks about this concept, their ideal you? In my opinion, very few people. We're so busy reacting to the various stimuli that we're exposed to on a daily basis that taking time to do this form of planning, it's almost impossible. Hardly ever happens. Who has time to think? I see life in certain ways, and I've designed some of these certain ways, or adopted them from others, for the purposes of understanding what we do as we live our lives, and using those same ways as structures to this process of defining the ideal you makes sense to me. All human activity seems to fall into one or more of the categories that I call the 12 worlds. So if your behaviors can be seen as occurring in the 12 worlds, those worlds provide areas to define the ideal you, not just the current you that is living and doing things that could be categorized into those worlds. Those 12 worlds are spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. Now, if you could see those things, and maybe it would have been helpful for me to describe it, they're aligned in that position. And when I was trying to memorize this early on, as I was seeing this, and this is a creation, is to see the spiritual being overhead, and then the head, of course, is mental, and then your face and is the where your emotions show up, and then the physicality and so on. You can almost see it going from top down to bottom. And you can look at any one of those worlds and what you do in those, what activities do you participate in the spiritual world, and how do you feel about that? Is this where the conflict between you and you shows up? Now you can start to see, wow, well, I certainly have conflict in regards to my mental. I want to learn this and I want to learn that, and I can't learn both of them, or I want to do this or I want to do that. And it goes on and on. You'll be able to look at those areas and recognize that, I just kind of knee-jerk react to a lot of stimuli, and rather than determining who I am that is going to respond to the various stimuli. All of us are directly influenced by our ego to fulfill its four driving needs. And so our personalities are really the way, it's the outer portion of us, if you will, that is seeking to get these ego needs fulfilled. In the ideal you, you're going to be the master of your ego. You will be in control of your ego, and it will be a wonderful tool and asset to you. In the not ideal you, the ego controls you. It is the master of you. And if you were to look at political leaders in America, you could see where the ego is completely under control. The problem is, when the ego is in control, it leads to more disharmony. And, of course, disharmony is not a characteristic that you would want to have in the description of the ideal you. Four driving needs of the ego. Number one, to defend the self from criticism, emotional attack. So you can see how people react to criticism. Do they go off the rails? Are they overreacting to that? Or do they just lie down and are they sheep? And I mean that not in a kind way. So there's a balance in there that we're looking for. We want to defend ourselves. We want to protect our individuality. But not everything in the world is an attack upon us personally. The second need is to come in first in the race of life. So it sets us up to be in competition with everybody else. So if we're always in competition with everybody else and we want to come in first, we will do all kinds of things to come in first. Again, looking at the political situation in America is a good way to say, man, these people will do anything to get elected, to get what they want, without regard to anybody else, and without regard to the pain that this process is going to cause. The third driving need of the ego that expresses through the personality is to take the best for yourself, without regard to the opposition of other people who might want to have something. I used to see this show up in Latin America when I was stationed in the army in Panama, and I had to deal with soldiers who ultimately were going to be the officers in the respective countries like El Salvador or Honduras and Nicaragua. During that time frame, back in the early 70s, if a person in one of those three countries said they wanted their child to go to school or to have decent food or if they wanted to have health care for their children, they were immediately labeled communists. And the American reaction to this was, oh, well, we don't want communists. They're bad people. And so we would pour money into the militaries of these countries, preventing, quote, the communists, which really was such false labeling. It was people wanted decent standards of living for themselves, and wealth and land were so consolidated into the hands of a few people, it was horrific. But those few powerful people were puppets to the Americans, so we supported them, and if they yelled communist, we reacted to it by giving them guns and bullets and bombs and more money. The fourth driving need of the ego is, once we've acquired what we want, once we have these possessions, once we took the best for ourselves, it is hold on to it. And when other people wanted to share in this largesse, we said, nuh-uh, not happening. We would keep it all to ourselves. So we were jealous if somebody tried to take our friends from us, our family members from us, our property, our money, our status, our power. We would do anything to hold on to that. And again, there's got to be such an obvious real-life demonstration of the ego just by picking up any newspaper for 5 days in a row and go, wow, there it is, there it is, there it is. I developed an energy model of life that was my response to my own question, what is it we're doing with regard to energy in our lives? I mean, just talking in terms of energy, what do we do? And consequently, that process of six steps illustrates what we do in energetic terms. And we have the choice of acting savagely in any one or all of those six phases, or we can act in a saintly fashion. I think somewhere in between those two extremes is where we're going to find the ideal you and the ideal me. And those steps of that energy model of life are energy acquisition. And if you were like, really, is that first? Think of a baby growing inside the womb of the mother, acquiring energy as it's developing from a fertilized ovum into what will be a full-term baby some 39, 40 weeks later. Oh, yeah, that's right. And when that baby is born, not long afterward, that baby is going to, under normal circumstances, want to suckle. It's like acquire energy. The acquire of the energy is not only food from the mother's milk, but also the energetic comfort and stability and sense of connectedness that the baby would have experienced for 9 months, but now being evicted from its first apartment is like, I'm insecure, I'm out here, and I want to reconnect. And when it's held to the breast of the mother, that heartbeat, I recognize that rhythm, ba-boom, 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 and it's good for the baby. That's energy acquisition. And you know this is happening even with young children, is they want to preserve what they've acquired. Kids, early on, under normal circumstances, I see this in preschool, they don't want to share toys. They're just like, that's my toy, And they start to battle with this. They start to preserve their field of energy, whether it's just space or objects, toys, or relationships. You know, they don't want their mother taking from them when the mother drops them off at preschool, for instance. And all kinds of stuff goes on like that. Translation. Translation of energy. Let's assume we have acquired broccoli in our dinner tonight. We're going to want to translate that. It's like, I don't want little teeny pieces of broccoli florets floating around in my bloodstream. And my cells go, that's kind of pretty, but what do I do with those? We translate that stuff. So if I'm speaking about translation in terms of food, we typically use the word digestion. It's like, that makes sense. We digest. We process this information, this energy that we would have ingested, and it just goes on and on. You go, If you're in school, preschool, kindergarten, first grade, you name any grade, we're going to receive energy inputs that from the teacher up standing in front of us telling us about this, the War of 1812 or whatever. We're like, hold on a second, I got to translate that into something that's meaningful. What does it mean? How does it fit into the pattern of the United States development and on? So this translation of energy, and people who are effective at that, of course, at the end of it, have really very usable information that they can apply to other circumstances in their lives. Which brings me to the next step in the energy model of life, expression. You take in this energy, you preserve it, you translate it, and now it's time to express it. So the broccoli that we had for dinner tonight, you know, tomorrow is another day. What do we do with this? Do we write the great American novel? Do we lay bricks? Do we paint a house? Do we start a triathlon? What is it we do with this energy? How do we express it? And of course, in our case, as human beings, our consciousness gives us such a potential to express in so many different ways that it's really up to us. The ideal thing, and the ideal you, would choose the highest value. It's almost like a real estate concept. You have a piece of property. It is thought that this property will naturally start to gravitate to its highest value. It may start off as an empty lot. Then it turns into a parking lot where somebody is charging $5 for all-day parking. Then it turns into a car wash. Then it turns into an office building. Then it turns in. And this natural progression is what is going to happen with the with expression, and for us as well. So we have the ability, unlike a plant in your garden or out in your front yard or anywhere else, those things are limited by their consciousness. They are not worried about tomorrow. They're basically doing what they do because that's what their consciousness says to do. A rose bush is going to be a rose bush. It's not going to be a baker. It's not going to be a great painter. It's not going to be a bricklayer. It's going to be a rose bush. And its attempt to express roses through the buds at the end of the branch is what we can pretty much expect. Now, when we take in energy and we preserve it and we translate it and we express it, there's going to be things that we cannot use in this process. And that brings us to release. You look around your house or condo or apartment, you go, wow, I got a lot of stuff that doesn't really have any value to me anymore. And this is a great time of the year to be able to recycle that to Goodwill or other places where it will have value to someone else. That cliche, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, put on a kind of a more mellow sort of footing, I would say, doesn't have value to me. I've got computer cables that don't have value to me, but maybe they have value to somebody else. So they're not exactly trash, not exactly treasure, but they don't have that much value to me, and I'd be willing to pass them along to somebody through Goodwill or some other charity, St. Vincent de Paul. And so this is what we do. And if I'm going back to the broccoli, at the end of the day, you're like, I have to go to the bathroom. That release we would describe as excretion in human body terms. And you go, this is normal. This is normal. We breathe in air. We take in air that has a certain percentage of oxygen. And then when we exhale, there's a greater percentage of carbon dioxide. Why? We can't really use carbon dioxide as a large portion of the air we breathe. We want more oxygen. And the good news is the plants in your garden are sitting there waiting for carbon dioxide. They want to take in carbon dioxide because when they exhale, when they respire, they are putting out oxygen. Kind of convenient, right? What we exhale because we don't need it anymore, we release it at the end of metabolism, is exactly what they're waiting for. And when they're done with their metabolism, photosynthesis and other forms, and they put out oxygen, it's like, I think we can get along with plants. And if you really thought of that, you say, well, the ideal me doesn't believe that we should cut down every single tree and turn it into a strip mall. We shouldn't blacktop every single forest. We shouldn't cut down every tree in the forest to raise cattle. Maybe we should let trees breathe. Yeah, well, only if we want to continue living on the planet would that be a good idea. Then ultimately, in the energy acquisition or the energy model of life, is closure. This is our ability to complete the cycle, to get good feelings from what we've been doing. And the challenge for a lot of us is like, well, what I just did was not perfect, so I can't get good feelings from it. Nonsense. Nonsense. And whoever said, if you can't do it right, don't do it at all, was an imbecile. Can you imagine saying that to a child who's in the crib? Little baby, I just want to point out this rule that we have in our family. If you can't do it right, don't do it at all. So before you stand up, before you try to stand up, before you try to take the first step, I just want to caution you. If you don't do it right the first time, you're not going to get a second chance. Idiotic, right? So this sense of closure, a sense of satisfaction, based upon what I knew, my level of awareness, the efforts that I put into it, this is what resulted. Give myself an attaboy, or you're a girl, an attagirl, and you go, okay, now what? I learned from this process. And there we go back to the energy acquisition. If we look at what we've done, we can then extract meaning from it, the value of it. And they're like, you know what? What? I should have zigged when I zagged. Or, oh, I'm glad I zagged when I zagged, because that was the ideal thing. That was the correct behavior that gave me the greatest result. That was cool. Let me do it again. And then we repeat the cycle of energy acquisition, through preservation, translation, expression, release, and closure all over again. And we only do that maybe thousands of times a day. I use another way to consider human needs. S-F-U-L-I plus two. Sometimes I pronounce it Sfuli plus two. It stands for survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, plus the need to be right, and the need to look good, get approval. When you see those needs and you consider yourself the ideal you, if you're hanging on by your nails, just getting by, you go, I'm in a survival mode. I am surviving, though, relative to a lot of people on planet Earth. In fact, I'm surviving very well. And we start to look at that, you know, how much freedom do we have? Freedom is largely a construct in our own minds, in our own imaginations. It's like, oh, I feel trapped. A lot of people say that about their work. They create that image of themselves being trapped in work. It's like, really? You have the freedom in a work environment to add more and more of your own energy into it, in order to increase your value to whatever organization you're a member of, then all kinds of good things can occur. Walter Russell, a modern-day Leonardo da Vinci when he was alive, I think he died in 1964, describes to his biographer, the man who saw the secrets of the universe, something very close to that. Google Walter Russell and you'll be all over that. He described when he was a teenager, he had a job working at a summer resort, and he desired to give 100% effort to every request from the clients of that resort. He went out of his way to above and beyond. He wasn't resisting. He was just, I'm committed to this. And he developed lifelong relationships with people who just, this kid is just unbelievable. He's going to be amazing when he grows up. And, of course, he was amazing when he grew up. World famous in five or six or seven different areas. But it was the commitment of energy to it that says, we're free to do that. And the next U in SFU is usefulness. We want to be useful. This is a natural impulse. If you doubt it, go stand next to a little child in a kitchen or anywhere else. That child is going to want to be useful. Let me do it. Let me do it. Mommy, Daddy, let me do it. Let me do it. I want to do it. Can I do it? Can I do it? Show me how to do it. I want to do it. We want to be useful. And if you want to discourage or demoralize or damage the soul of a person, don't let him or her be useful. I think we've done that with African Americans as a culture. We've done that with First Americans. We've prevented them from being useful. We restricted their freedom, of course. I mean, they populate the prison system in unbelievable percentages. But it is this need to be useful that drives us. And love, the ability to be loved and ability to love. If you can find something to love, it's common nowadays to be able to say, oh, you know what, I read an article about taking puppies or dogs to old folks' homes where they had a chance to interact with a dog. They didn't have the responsibility of taking care of it day to day, but to be able to interact with something, to give it love, and they know that puppy was going to love that person back without question. You know, oh, no, you're old, you're wrinkled, you're this, you're that. That puppy is not processing information like that. That puppy is like a little love machine. And consequently, these people are experiencing love in what seems to be a pattern of institutionalized neglect or sterility. So that makes a lot of sense. And this identity, while your identity and my identity is constantly changing, oh, I see myself a little bit differently today, day before Christmas, 2017, than I did last Christmas or yesterday or the day before. So this process of growing our identity, who we are, That's the whole point of this talk. The ideal you. That ideal you is you. That's what I'm talking about. And we get down the need to be right and the need to look good, get approval. That's really where you can see the ego take over. The need to be right. You got to be right every single time, because that's what way is better than that to avoid criticism. Just be right every single time, 100% of the time, on every single subject, period, end of story. It's like, But of course, that's not going to prevent people from attacking you. They're going to attack you emotionally or physically, even if you are right. It's like, the ego was wrong on that account. Yeah, no kidding. And then this need to look good. You know, we posture ourselves. We get all primped up. We look and we're trying to get the feedback from people and go, we'll give you attention because you are so fill in the blank. And so now, instead of doing what is true to the ideal us, we're working the crowd. We're trying to manipulate them into giving us attention and approval. But really, when you think of some of these people that are willing to give you approval, you go like, man, oh man, that's the problem. I had this experience years ago in corporate America. My boss said to me, I put your name in to be a sales manager for Bob Doyle. Bob Doyle. And Bob Doyle said, Tom Costello would be the last person I would hire to be a sales manager. And my manager tells me this. And I said, Joe, I take that as a compliment that Bob Doyle doesn't see me as being like him because I so disrespect that guy. So what looked like ostensibly as an insult was actually a compliment. If Hitler likes you, that's not a good thing. That's not a good compliment. You don't want that. And so when other people of low morality, by the way, Bob got fired shortly thereafter for impregnating one of the clerical people in an adjoining apartment or a department. So, doesn't make him a real bad guy just because of that, but I think there were other characteristics of his personality that made him less wonderful in my estimation, and maybe the estimation of other people who knew him. So, these needs, and you could look at them and say, you know what? I can see how I act from a survival standpoint, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good, get approval. Oh, yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm like a puppet on a string to those things. Or, no, I'm consciously and premeditatedly making decisions on how to approach this stuff. Abraham of Abraham Hicks talks about the emotional guidance system. Feeling good is evidence of focusing on what we want, and feeling not good is evidence of focusing on what we don't want. So, if there is a path to what we want, feeling good is the path that you and I are going to want to take toward that ideal you and the ideal me. I use the 10 emotional states scale as a reference system, and we can tell how we and others are feeling just with a little bit of practice using this scale, and we change depending on context, and even within that context we can change from minute to minute. And that scale, going from the lowest vibrational state to the highest, goes shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. SAG, S-A-G, FLAP, F-L-A-P, CAP, C-A-P. Easy to remember, and when you start dealing, you can be like, ooh, let me just see how I feel. We'll know where we are on the rung of the ladder, because our view of ourselves, life, opportunity, other people, God, all change depending on which rung of this 10-step scale we happen to be standing on. The ideal you is up in the top three: courageousness, acceptance, and peace. The ideal you is you. The other you, is the you that you have been told that you are. Other people told you, you're my daughter, you're my brother, my sister, you're my son, my friend, you're not my friend, you're my boyfriend, you're my girlfriend. You're pretty, you're handsome, you're ugly, you're homely. You're smart, you're dumb. You're fun, you're boring, you're strong, you're weak, you're fast, you're slow, you're good, you're bad. And on and on and on. And then you add in our own egos. You told yourself who you thought you were. You're perfect. No, you're completely flawed. A total success. No, you're a total failure. You're deserving of the best, or you're undeserving of anything good. You're very capable. You're hopelessly incapable. And you go, man, oh man, the ego thinks in terms of this binary, you know, all or nothing kind of thinking? Yep, it does. So, you and others have inaccurately defined who you are, and the worst part is, you've lived your life as if these inaccuracies were true. In other words, you built your life using a faulty blueprint, and now we struggle. I don't know why I'm not happy. I don't know why I'm not healthy. I don't know why I'm not successful. This is a clue. In the early days of data management with computers, the phrase garbage in, garbage out was used as a cautionary alert. You know, the data that you're putting in, if it's not true, if it's false, when you process it, it's going to come out false. You're not going to get true information if it's you fed it bad information to start with. So here we are in 2017, nearing 2018, and our lives are proof that this statement applies to more than just data management for computers. Garbage in, garbage out. I had a mentor in San Diego years ago who told me, you know what? It's not what we don't know that's the problem. A lot of people think, oh, I gotta know more. That's not the problem. The problem is what we think we know that's false, that's not so, that's the problem. So there we are with this faulty information again that is driving our behaviors, our thoughts, our feelings, our actions, the way we talk, the way we relate to ourselves and others. It's like, that's the problem. And that saying translates today into the person who we think we are, that's the problem. That's the problem. Who you think you are is the problem. And who you really are is not the problem. That ideal you, that's the solution. And the law of attraction and the law of cause and effect say we will become what we think, feel, speak, and act. And defining the ideal you and giving thought, feeling, words, and actions that are in harmony with that vision of the ideal you is how the ideal you manifests in your life. Writing longhand, and that's how I journal every day, writing longhand on three-hole punch line paper, you know, that a school kid would use, is a good way to improve your learning. When I was first learning Spanish years ago, when I was in the language school in Monterey, California, in the United States Army, writing out words and sentences in combination with speaking the words and sentences aloud helped me with my retention, but also my confidence with regard to Spanish. Writing out the way you see the ideal you will make manifesting that person easier and faster. It's likely that initially defined ideal you, you sit down in an hour after hearing these words and say, okay, what's the ideal me? Let me choose one of those areas that Tom talked about, and then you start writing it out. What you write out in that first episode is just the initial part. You're going to keep adding information and more ideas. Oh, I got another aspect of that ideal me. Oh, I got another aspect of the ideal me. And it's going to change over time. It's going to be fuller and better and more robust and vibrant. And maybe to belabor that a little bit, it's the process of creating the ideal you is a lot like building a home. You'll have a plan that includes some major aspects of and facets of the home. Square footage, right? How big? What is the size of this house? The number of bedrooms and bathrooms and so on. But the actual construction starts with laying the foundation and then putting in the main load-bearing walls that will support the weight of the roof. and know certain key aspects in terms of our own individual lives can be easily identified. This is it, and you just put them in there. And little by little, we're going to add details to the construction of the ideal you, just as we would have done with the house building. And maybe, for this reason, the body characteristics will be the place to begin when it comes to defining the ideal you. That would mean referring back to the 12 worlds and starting to build out with the physical world. As the saying goes, health is the most important form of wealth. Being healthy, being self-accepting of our physical form makes everything else better and more enjoyable. There are many aspects to our physicality. If you have had any recent blood tests, you realize that those tests and the doctors who review them are looking at things we are completely unaware of. Oh, do you know that this is the ideal level? No, I have no idea. And cholesterol, the good and bad, and the triglycerides, and this and that and the other thing. It's like, wow, who knew all this stuff? Obviously, those people do, because they're looking for problems, and then they sell us solutions. For me, my body size and my weight and how I feel each day when I get up, and how I feel throughout the day, is what gets most of my physical attention. While I generally eat healthily, I do drink alcoholic beverages. I know that exercising is important, mainly because it makes me feel better about my body. So going to the gym 3 times a week, going on long walks, help me move my body, and it creates some feeling of mental, emotional, physical balance. And I like that. It's like, I did something. I was useful. I created something cool. Just by doing that, that's that sense of expression that ends up in feelings of satisfaction or closure that I talked about before. I was recently at a fine resort in Cancun, Mexico. Anglos and Asians seem to make a 50-50 mix of the patrons of this excellent resort. But the number of obese Americans was startling to me. Now, I've noticed previously, usually at a beach and pool resort, the people that go there are people who are comfortable being in bathing suits. You know, they're physically fit, they're attractive people, men and women. However, not this time. There were a few Asians that were plump. They tended to be a little bit older, but young and middle-aged Americans, they were way more than plump. They were some big people. On the other hand, to counterbalance this image, in the gym were Americans in superb physical conditions, working out ferociously. I worked out, but not ferociously. Now, I have a list of about 35, maybe a few more, items that are related to the physical world, just besides size, weight, height, right? You can imagine, that's right. That list could be sort of a checklist to identify relative importances. Not everything is important to other people, or the same way it is important to you or to me. And we could also look at that checklist and consider what the current condition that is being experienced by us. The other world that would probably be uppermost in demanding our attention sooner rather than later is the financial world. Having money enough to live comfortably without great anxiety is important. I talk about living to be 120 and healthy. People will die because they can't afford to live. So it would be nice to have money enough to live as long as you want to live. Existing in the survival mode, you know, like every single day being in the survival mode, doesn't leave much time or mind share, for that matter, for the development of our consciousness. It keeps us, you know, I'm so busy scrambling, trying to stay alive. I don't have time to think of these finer concepts of human consciousness. However, financial struggle, like physical struggles, can really be the impetus for us to seek alternative ways to live your life, my life, and to satisfy our needs. The prayer that follows describes what may be the ideal way to find the ideal you. This prayer is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.